disciples. So it's in a very generic sense, it could be a follower of anybody. And in this case, we're talking about a follower of Christ, of course. So a follower, what else do you think of when you think about? Okay, a student or a learner. That really, I think, gets to the heart of what a disciple is. A student or a learner. Someone who follows the master to become like the master. What other thoughts or... Yes, sir?
It seems to be the same root as discipline.
Okay.
So there's going to be some changes or some amount of self-control that are going to be needed.
Yeah, so Randy noticed that the word disciple looks very much like our English word discipline. And that very much is a concept that is related to a disciple. In order to be a disciple of Christ, we have to discipline ourselves to be like Him. So we're going to be talking this week about some of those concepts, some of those, what it means to discipline oneself. Any other thoughts or characteristics of a disciple?
A helper.
A helper? Okay. What else? An imitator, okay. Okay. Or particularly someone who follows a teacher.
Someone who submits to another person's authority.
Okay. All right, so there's a sense of authority. And one other thing to add is the idea of commitment. And we're going to be talking about commitment later on this week. But a lot of times, we might have kind of a vague idea of what a disciple is. But back in ancient times, they knew what a disciple was in terms of a commitment. When you became a disciple of someone, you didn't just kind of follow them 50%, half-heartedly, but you would make sacrifices in order to follow that person. You were committed to them. And so all of those ideas are good concepts or ideas to think about when we think about the word or concept of a disciple. So this morning we're going to be talking about the Gospel of John and how John helps us answer this question. I want to begin, though, with just an overview of the Gospel of John. If we could summarize what John is about in a simple three-part sentence, it would be this. John presents Jesus as the divine Son of God, provides evidence for Jesus' claim, and thirdly, challenges us to either believe or disbelieve that claim. So the book of John is all about Jesus and what we're going to do with Jesus. So if you will, turn to John chapter 20. John is one of those books in the Bible that just comes right out and tells us what it's about, the reason that it was written. John chapter 20, verses 30 and 31, John writes, "Therefore many other signs Jesus also performed in the presence of the disciples, which are not written in this book. But these have been written so that you may believe that Jesus is the Christ, the Son of God, and that believing you may have life in His name." So how would you describe what the book of John is about? Why did John write this gospel for us? So that we could be saved. And he points out that the way that we access that life or that salvation is through believing in Jesus the Christ, the Son of God. That's what John's gospel is all about. To lead us to the point where we can say, I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. Now it's easy for us to say that, right? It's easy for us to just claim, I believe in Jesus, or to claim association with Jesus. But the question we're going to be talking about in part this morning is, what kind of faith is that? What kind of faith characterizes a disciple? So the theme of John is faith. If you go back to the beginning of the Gospel of John, John presents us with who Jesus is. John doesn't tell us about where Jesus was born. At least he doesn't tell us the birth story of Jesus. He doesn't tell us about Jesus growing up. Matthew and Luke tell us about that. But John just kind of jumps right in And he actually goes before Jesus was born, and he tells us that before Jesus was born as a human, he existed as God. So in verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things came into being through him, and apart from him, nothing came into being that has come into being. In him was life, and the life was the light of men. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not comprehend it. If you drop down to verse 12, but as many as received him, to them he gave the right to become children of God, even to those who believe in his name, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. So the theme of John is faith. And again, it's easy for us to say, I believe in Jesus, but what kind of a faith is that? We'll talk about that. Interesting, when you look at the ends of John, the beginning and the end, both of them have Jesus telling people to follow him. If you look at John chapter 1 and verse 43, it says, the next day he purposed to go into Galilee, and he found Philip, and Jesus said to him, follow me. And if you go to chapter 21, at the very end, Jesus says the same thing to Peter. Picking up at verse 19, John 21, 19, now this he said, signifying by what kind of death he would glorify God. And when he had spoken this, he said to him, the him being Peter, follow me. And of course, we know how Peter turns around and he sees John and he says, well, what about this man over here? And Jesus' answer to him essentially is, don't worry about what John is to do. Worry about what you are to do. And so in verse 21 or verse 22, he says, you follow me. The point is that this is what characterizes a disciple, as we've already said. A disciple is one who believes in Jesus as the Son of God, as the Christ, to the point that he says, I'm going to follow Christ. And you might notice that when Jesus is telling Peter to follow him, he doesn't tell him where he's going. He just says simply, follow me. This is an open-ended invitation to give all of our loyalty to Christ, no matter where that loyalty takes us. We're willing to follow Christ wherever he leads us. Whatever God tells us to do, whatever Jesus tells us to do, that is what we do because we have unqualified loyalty to him. So if we could summarize the Gospel of John, it's about becoming a disciple of Jesus. It's about believing in Jesus. It's about having trust in him to the point that we follow him. This is illustrated in the Gospel of John in several conversations. And we're going to look at those conversations this morning. Three conversations that illustrate what false discipleship is, and then four conversations that illustrate what true discipleship is. So let's begin with illustrating what not real discipleship looks like. Three groups of people here we're going to look at that were called disciples, or that believed in Jesus on some level, but eventually their actions or their words illustrated otherwise. And so let's begin in John chapter 6. John chapter 6, in this account, you might remember that Jesus has fed the 5,000. And someone just tell me, the next day they're looking for Jesus, and what are they looking for? Anybody who studied this account before, what are they coming to Jesus for again? Okay, they're coming to be fed again. So look at verse 26. Jesus answered them and said, truly, truly, I say to you, you seek me not because you saw signs, but because you ate of the loaves and were filled. So apparently Jesus knows their hearts, right? Jesus could see through their superficial intentions. They were just looking for another meal. So Jesus points out to them in verse 27 that they're working for food that perishes, but they ought to be working for the food that does not perish, the food that is going to last for eternal life. So they were seeking out physical food, but their minds were stuck there. Of course, we all need to eat, right? These disciples needed to eat. But that's not what Jesus wanted them to follow him for. He wanted them to follow him for the spiritual food. And so he goes on to tell them, I am the bread of life. And he has this conversation with them beginning in verse 32. Truly, truly, I say to you, it is not Moses who has given you the bread out of heaven, but it is my Father who gives you the true bread out of heaven. For the bread of God that is that which comes down out of heaven and gives life to the world. And in verse 34, they say, Lord, always give us this bread. You know, on one level, that may seem, okay, now they're beginning to get it here. Now they're beginning to understand what he's talking about. But they're still stuck on this earthly bread. And Jesus says in verse 35, I am the bread of life. Well, as the conversation continues, Jesus even goes deeper. And he says in verse 51, I am the living bread that came down out of heaven. If anyone eats of this bread, he will live forever. And the bread also which I will give for the life of the world is my flesh. And here's a changing point. Turning point in this conversation, Jesus has now said, this bread is my flesh. He's talking there about his death and how in order to believe in Jesus and have this life, they have to trust in his death. But they start complaining and say, is this man going to give us his flesh to eat? And in verse 60, they said, this is a difficult statement. Who can listen to it? And then in verse 66, as a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. Notice in verse 66 that these were called his disciples. Okay, these were people who were following Jesus for a time, but then they ceased following Jesus. And I think the problem was their faith was focused on earthly benefits. They were following Jesus for superficial benefits. What are some ways that we might do the same thing? What are some ways that we can follow Jesus out of earthly benefits or superficially? What are some ways that we can do that? Okay, so we understand that assembling with the saints is a necessary part of being a Christian. But sometimes our motive for doing that may not necessarily be, you know, what ought to be the motive. Okay, maybe we like the activities that go on. Maybe we're a part of a church that has a lot of social gatherings. And really the only reason that we're a part of that congregation or that church is because we like the activities. Okay, that's one example, good example. Any other, what are some other ways we can follow Jesus superficially?
Pacifying my mind by thinking if I just come to worship on Sunday twice and go to a Bible class on Wednesday, I'm good to go. I'm done.
Okay, so checking the, kind of a to-do list box off. Okay. What about family connections? Maybe we follow Jesus just because that's what our family does. You know, if I... Look back at my past history. My family has always been Christians, and so that's just what I do because that's what my family does. Or maybe it's just a part of our culture. You know, it used to be that if you wanted to be a true American, you called yourself a Christian. I mean, that's just what Americans did as part of our culture. Maybe not so much anymore because our culture is becoming more secular. But still, there's some seeds of some remnants of that. That if you want to be a true American, you are a Christian. So. There's a lot of ways that we can apply this, but just suffice to say here that that's not true discipleship. Okay, following Jesus for the earthly benefits is not true discipleship. Let's look at a second example. John chapter 8. Here's an example of people who are following Jesus with shallow faith. John chapter 8, picking up in verse 30. It says, Jesus spoke these things, and many came to believe in him. Notice that they came to believe in Jesus. So verse 31, Jesus seeks to deepen their faith. And he says to those Jews who had believed in him, if you continue in my word, then you are truly disciples of mine. And you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free. Okay, I want to stop there for just a moment. And notice that these people are said to believe in Jesus And Jesus acknowledged that belief. He said, if you continue in my word, then you'll prove yourselves to be my true disciples. Well, let's skip over the entire chapter and go to the last verse, verse 59. Verse 59 says, therefore they picked up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple. If we read the entire, in between verses 30 to 59, we would see that this is the same group of people that are said to believe in Jesus. There's not a change in audience here, but Jesus is talking to the same. So how do they go from believing in Jesus to getting ready to pick up stones and kill him? Well, three things Jesus points out to them. First of all, he points out their sin and their need for salvation. So Jesus had said to them, if you know the truth will make you free. In verse 33, they take offense to that. And they say, we've never been enslaved to anyone. And so they acknowledge, they don't acknowledge that they're in sin, and they ignore their history, because it used to be that when they were in Egypt, they were enslaved. But Jesus says to them in verse 34, if you commit sin, you're the slave of sin. So the first thing that they took offense at was that they were in sin. Secondly, Jesus pointed out their hypocrisy. Verses 42 through about verse 44, the Jews had said that we have Abraham as our father. And Jesus, just going to paraphrase here, Jesus says, if Abraham was your true father, then you would believe in me because Abraham spoke about me. And so he acknowledges their hypocrisy. And then finally, and probably this is the kicker here, Jesus points out his divine authority. In verse 58, Jesus said to them, truly, truly, I say to you, before Abraham was born, I am. And those last two words there struck a chord with them because they knew the claim that Jesus was making. He wasn't saying that, you know, I was before Abraham was born, but I am. That reminds us of what God said to Moses, right? In the burning bush. Tell Pharaoh that the I am has sent me. And so Jesus points out his divine authority, and that's the point at which they picked up stones to throw at Jesus. Because their faith was shallow. What are some characteristics of shallow faith that you might see today, in addition to the ones we've already mentioned?
Believing with no action. I mean, James says, you know, even the demons believe. So big deal, believe, but there's no action behind your belief, your faith.
Yeah, and I guess that really gets to the crucial point of, you know, this distinction between false discipleship and true discipleship. You know, the demons acknowledged that God exists, Jesus exists. Whenever they met him, they saw his power and were even afraid of him. They would fall down before him. But, you know, they had no action to follow that. And that's what false discipleship is. Shallow faith. A faith that doesn't move us to make sacrifices. We're following Jesus on our own terms. If our sin is pointed out by a brother or sister, we blame it on them instead of taking responsibility for our actions, our sins. Maybe if God's authority is pointed out to us. Maybe if there's something that we're not doing or that we are doing that we should not do that violates God's authority and that's pointed out to us, do we reject that? That's a signal, that's what I'm trying to say, of shallow faith. How deep is our faith? And so we have to ask ourselves that question. Would we reject Jesus like these Jews who had said to believe in him? But then they picked up stones to kill him. And then our third example is following Jesus in secret. In John chapter 12, and again, we're looking at examples of not true discipleship. And in John chapter 12, Jesus kind of makes a last appeal here in the Gospel of John before he sits down with his disciples. You might remember in John chapters 13 through 17, he has a private conversation with his 12 apostles, preparing them for what's about to happen and telling them, you know, I'm going to send the Holy Spirit to comfort you and to reveal all truth to you when he goes back up to heaven. But before that happens, he makes his final appeal to people to believe in him. So in verse 42, John says, "Nevertheless, many even of the rulers believed in him, but because of the Pharisees, they were not confessing him, for fear that they would be put out of the synagogue. For they loved the approval of men rather than the approval of God." So let me just ask you, what's the problem of being a secret disciple?
You're not living it to the public eye. I mean, that's been my worst sin or problem in my whole Christian life, man. You know, it's not letting my light shine like it should. You know, I can do it around you guys really well, you know. I do it around a nucleus of teachers at school that claim to be Christians. I do that really well there. You know, but when I'm out, you know, do I really let my light shine?
Yeah. Fear. How many of us make choices based upon what other people are going to say about us or how they're going to treat us? We're afraid that we're going to lose influence. We're afraid we're going to lose relationships. And that's the core problem here. These rulers believed in Jesus. Okay, they said, yes, he's the Christ. He's the Son of God. But for fear of the Jews, they weren't confessing him openly. Another example of this in John chapter 19, the man that buried Jesus' body, Joseph of Arimathea, is called here in verse 38 a secret disciple. And I've wondered about that before. If we're true disciples of Christ, can we just keep that to ourselves? Now, with Joseph here of Arimathea, it seems like this could have been something that he took courage. So he had to go to Pilate and ask him for the body of Jesus. So is this him kind of revealing his secretive discipleship? And in that case, he becomes a true disciple at this point because he shows that, yes, I am associated with Jesus. But John says here that he was a secret disciple for fear of the Jews. And I think so often that probably characterizes us. We're so afraid of what people are going to say to us, or that we're going to be ostracized or mocked, that we are a secret disciple. We just keep it to ourselves. We don't reveal who we truly are or what we believe. We don't stand up and speak whenever we ought to speak, and so we are secretive disciples. But that's not the kind of faith that truly believes in Jesus. Okay, that, you know, we might call that some level of faith, but it's not true faith. It's not a true disciple of Jesus.
I can say I'm setting a good example because people I know I don't do that. They know I don't drink. They know I don't do this. But like you said, am I broadcasting my faith? Am I trying to bring them in? I'm trying to save their soul too.
Yeah.
Am I just sitting back? Well, I don't do anything wrong. You see that? They go, well, you're a good person.
Yeah. And of course, there's a difference between being a good person and being a disciple of Jesus. I mean, certainly a disciple of Jesus is going to be a good person, but because he is a disciple, that's the key. That's what defines him. So these are three examples of what we might say fake or shallow or empty discipleship is. And before we leave this point, just want to say that it's very easy to be this kind of disciple, isn't it? It's very easy to follow Jesus when things are going well, when I'm getting earthly benefits out of this, when I've got good friendships, when I've got a good church family, when I've got things are going well in my life. Because I'm a good person, because I'm a Christian, I'm getting a lot out of that. It's easy to follow Jesus with shallow faith. And it's certainly easy to follow Jesus by keeping it to yourself. But that's not what true discipleship is. Let's show you four examples of what true discipleship looks like. There are four conversations that Jesus has with people that illustrate what true discipleship is. In fact, these are four examples of people who make bold confessions about who Jesus is. Okay, they weren't secretive disciples. They weren't afraid of being known as a believer or a follower of Jesus, but instead they made bold confessions of who Jesus was. And we're going to begin in John chapter 1. The first example of this is Nathanael. John chapter 1, and let's just read verses 45 through 51. Ryan, would you mind reading John 1, 45 through 51?
Philip found Nathanael and said to him, "We have found him of whom Moses in the law and also the prophets wrote, Jesus of Nazareth, the son of Joseph." Nathanael said to him, "Can anything good come out of Nazareth?" Philip said to him, "Come and see." Jesus saw Nathanael coming toward him and said of him, "Behold, an Israelite indeed, in whom there is no deceit." Nathanael said to him, "How do you know me?" Jesus answered him, "Before Philip called you, when you were under the fig tree, I saw you." Nathanael answered him, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." Jesus answered him, "Because I said to you, I saw you under the fig tree, do you believe? You will see greater things than these." And he said to them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, you will see heaven opened and the angels of God ascending and descending on the Son of Man."
So how did Nathanael first react when Philip told him, "We found Jesus, the one that is the Christ spoken of in the old law, and he's from Nazareth"? How did Nathanael respond?
Doubtful.
Okay, he was doubtful. Can anything good come out of Nazareth? Not necessarily because Nazareth was a, you know, evil place or a wicked place like Sodom and Gomorrah, but just kind of a, you know, small town, podunk town, we might say, from backwoods Galilee. You know, that's a no-name village. A prophet coming from there, especially the prophet coming from there. And Philip simply says, "Come and see." And so Nathanael was skeptical. He maybe doubted. But when he investigated for himself, he came to the point when he realized, yes, this is the Christ. I've wondered before about this conversation between Jesus and Nathanael. Jesus takes the initiative here, and seeing Nathanael says, "Here's an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." Okay, in other words, this is an honest man. And Nathanael, probably taken aback by this, "How do you know me? You've never met me before. I've never met you before." And Jesus says, "Before Philip called you, I saw you when you were under the fig tree." And it's at that point that Nathanael says, "You are," in verse 49, "you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." And that's the first confession that we find in the Gospel of John that's not the John the Baptist himself. And I've wondered before, what caused Nathanael to say that? Is there some sort of, was Nathanael doing something under the fig tree that he didn't think anyone else knew about? Or, you know, there's something that caused him to believe in Jesus at this point. But the point that I want us to see here is that true disciples are those who follow Jesus after true investigation. They overcome doubts, which do sometimes plague our lives. We have doubts sometimes, but if we're going to be true disciples, we have to wrestle with those doubts. We have to overcome those doubts. We overcome preconceived ideas. We have to overcome prejudice. The question is, are we going to do that like Nathanael did, with honesty? Remember, Jesus said, "You are an Israelite in whom there is no deceit." You're an honest man. And that, I think, is what a true disciple of Jesus is. How do we learn to develop our own faith and investigate for ourselves who Jesus is? Thoughts or comments on that? Okay, several people have mentioned study. You cannot learn about Jesus without studying about Jesus, right? I mean, it's one thing for us to sit in a Bible class like right now and learn about Jesus. Hopefully we are learning something about Jesus. But are we going to take responsibility for that ourselves? We can't give that responsibility to somebody else. No one can develop my faith for me. No one can develop your faith for you. You've got to develop that for yourselves. Any other thoughts or comments on that? Okay. And that happens frequently. People have wrong ideas about who Jesus is, and a lot of times those are mountains to overcome. People have developed these concepts of maybe just God being this loving God of accepting anyone and everyone, regardless of what they do or believe. Or maybe the opposite extreme of God being this ogre who is just waiting for us to trip up so he can send us to hell. Those are pictures or concepts of God that are not truly characterizing God. We've got to overcome our preconceived ideas of who Jesus is in order to have this true faith. I love the example of the Samaritans. John chapter 4, after Jesus has the conversation with the Samaritan woman at the well, he has this conversation about the living water, and she goes back into the town of the Samaritans, and she says, could this be the Christ? And Jesus stays with them for about 2 days. And in verse 41, it says, many more believed because of his word. And they were saying to the woman, it is no longer because of what you said that we believe, for we have heard for ourselves and know that this one is indeed the Savior of the world. Now, initially, they were curious about Jesus because of what the woman said. But when Jesus stayed with them for 2 days, it says they came to believe in him because of his word. And they came to understand, not just because of what she said. This wasn't just hearsay anymore. It was after careful and personal investigation themselves. And those of us that are parents need to take this lesson to heart. It is our job as parents not just to tell our children about God and the Bible and Christ, but to lead them to the point to shepherd their hearts, to teach their hearts, so that they will come to believe in Jesus for themselves. It's not enough for them just to do that because mom or dad does that, but it's our job to lead them to faith in Christ. That's the first example of real discipleship. Second example is Peter. John chapter 6, we've been here before. This is where the disciples had superficial faith. They were looking for the food, and they stopped following Jesus. Picking up in verse 66, as a result of this, many of his disciples withdrew and were not walking with him anymore. So Jesus said to the 12, you do not want to go away also, do you? Simon Peter answered him, and this is the second confession of faith in the Gospel of John. Lord, to whom shall we go? You have words of eternal life. We have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. So here, Peter is an example of what a true disciple is. A true disciple believes in Jesus when nobody else does. The rest of the disciples were scattering. They weren't being fed anymore. Jesus wasn't giving them what they were seeking because they weren't seeking eternal things. They were seeking superficial things, physical things. But Peter says, where are we going to go? And here's a good lesson for us whenever we struggle with doubts. First of all, when we doubt sometimes, there are a lot of questions we don't have the answers to. But Peter considered the alternative. And he said, if I leave Jesus, where else am I going to go? Is the alternative really a viable alternative? Is it a good alternative to Jesus? I may not understand everything about Jesus, but I know that I don't want to go the other alternative. It's not going to get me anywhere. But secondly, Peter focused on what he did know in verse 69. There are a lot of things Peter did not know. He probably didn't understand everything that Jesus was saying about eating his flesh and drinking his blood. By the way, a lot of times, most of the time, the disciples didn't understand what Jesus was saying. But in verse 69, Peter said, we have believed and have come to know that you are the Holy One of God. Instead of focusing on what they didn't know, they focused on what they did know and why they knew it. So here's an example of a man who followed Jesus when he was unpopular. Maybe there's a contrast between the secret disciple and Peter here. Peter is a disciple who's not afraid to stand up and say, yes, I'm a follower of Jesus. At least at this point. Later on, he's going to be afraid to do that. But at this point in his life, he was courageous in saying, I believe in Jesus. Thirdly, is an example of Martha. And what do we usually remember Martha for? What's the story that we a lot of times associate with Martha? Okay, she was taking care of the kitchen. And Mary was at Jesus' feet, and she got angry with Mary because she wasn't helping her. And so Jesus rebuked her in a gentle way. Martha, Martha, you're so focused on other things. And this is my paraphrase here, but Mary has chosen the good part. So a lot of times we have this picture of Martha being kind of a, not too focused on spiritual things. She's more focused on the physical things of life. But I want to tell you that in John chapter 11, Martha makes the third confession of faith in Jesus. And it is a bold confession. So in John chapter 11, Lazarus dies. And Lazarus' sisters, Martha and Mary, come to Jesus. And Martha says to Jesus in verse 21, Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died. Even now, I know that whatever you ask of God, God will give you. And Jesus said to her, your brother will rise again. Martha said to him, I know that he will rise again in the resurrection on the last day. Now, just stop there for a moment. Jesus knew beforehand that he was going to raise Lazarus from the dead. That's why he didn't come initially to heal him from his disease. So when he does die, Jesus says to Martha, he's going to rise again. And Martha's thinking that Jesus is saying, on the final day, the day of judgment, he's going to rise from the dead. That's not what he's talking about. In verse 25, Jesus said to her, I am the resurrection and the life. He who believes in me will live even if he dies. And everyone who lives and believes in me will never die. Do you believe this? And here's what she says in verse 27. Yes, Lord, I have believed that you are the Christ, the Son of God, even he who comes into the world. Up to this point, this is the most complete confession of faith that we found in the Gospel of John. And again, it is a great, courageous one. She's in a time of mourning, a time of grief. She's probably got questions. Why did Jesus let my brother die? Remember, she said, if you had been here, this wouldn't have happened. But in this time of crisis in her life, she built her life, she built this confession upon what she knew about Jesus. I have believed that you are the Christ. Now, fast forward to the 24th century. We still go through crisis. We suffer grief. We are diagnosed with diseases. We see tragedies in our world today. The question is, what kind of disciples are we going to show ourselves when that happens? Are we going to build our lives upon this same confession that we know we've come to believe that Jesus is the Son of God? So I may not understand why this is all happening. I may not understand why my loved one died or why God let this happen to my life or to someone else's life, but I know that you're the Christ, the Son of God. That's what a true disciple says in the midst of a crisis. And then finally, we have the example of Thomas. And in John chapter 20, this is, from what I've been able to gather, kind of a climax in the Gospel of John, or the climax in the Gospel of John. Remember the story of Thomas. Again, we remember him as doubting Thomas, maybe a man of little faith, but here he doesn't have little faith. Remember, Thomas wasn't there when Jesus first appeared to the disciples after his resurrection, and he refused to believe. And so, in verse 27, Jesus said to Thomas, reach here with your finger and see my hands, and reach here with your hand and put it into my side, and do not be unbelieving, but believing. Thomas answered and said to him, my Lord and my God. My Lord and my God. That, I think, is the climax of the book of John. Because you remember that the Gospel of John is all about leading us to faith in Jesus as the Son of God. And not just as God's Son, but God Himself. Remember John chapter 1 verse 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. And Thomas is the one at the end of the book who confesses, "My Lord and my God." This is the one that I need to submit to because he is my master and my God. So Thomas is an example of one who doesn't have shallow faith, but he has true faith that leads him to reverence and even obedience. And so the question that we need to ask ourselves this morning is, does this describe me? It's easy to be a secret disciple, or it's easy to be a superficial disciple, but it's a lot harder to investigate for ourselves and be honest with the evidence. It's a lot harder to follow Jesus when he's unpopular. It's a lot harder to follow Jesus when we're in crisis, and it's a lot harder to follow Jesus whenever he demands that we obey him. But a true disciple will do all of those things, because a true disciple is one who confesses the same thing that Thomas confessed. This is my Lord and my God. And because of that, I'm going to give my all to Jesus, because that's what I do in submission to God. Any other thoughts or comments on what is a disciple? Okay, so we've covered a lot of territory this morning, but I hope this kind of gives us a good foundation from which to build our future lessons. So a disciple here is one who believes in Jesus, and we'll talk about what that means throughout the rest of the week. Thank you.